Stanley, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The debate over birth control coverage flared up earlier this year when the Obama administration announced it would be mandatory under the new health care law. Some religious organizations cried foul, saying they should not have to pay for a practice they find morally objectionable. The discussion then spread to the presidential campaign and out to many state legislatures, including New Hampshire. In the Granite State, House Republicans said the controversy spurred them to look at state laws, and they discovered that for 12 years, insurers here have also been required to include contraception in their coverage. So last week, the House voted to reverse that law, allowing employers with a religious objection to opt out of including birth control. The measure now goes to the state Senate. Even if senators agree with their House colleagues, however, Governor Lynch has said he favors the law currently in place, and the House vote was not near the margins needed to override a veto. But the issue won't go away. Both parties, especially Democrats, may keep it alive as a topic they hope will bring them votes in the fall elections. Today in The Exchange, concerns over contraceptive coverage, what's happened in New Hampshire, and where this debate may go from here. Let's hear from you this hour. Join us with your calls. Should employer-provided insurance policies include birth control in their coverage, or is this something people should have to buy on their own? How much do you think this debate is about religion, the price of insurance, or politics? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests in studio. Cindy Rosenwald is here, Democratic State Representative from Nashua in her fourth term, and former chair of the Health, Human Services, and Elderly Affairs Committee. And Representative Rosenwald, it's nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Scott Moody is also with us, Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research. And Scott, welcome back. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you.
And Scott, I want to start with you. As I said, the New Hampshire House has voted to reverse this law passed 12 years ago, which required employers to include contraceptive coverage. Why do you think, Scott, this is the right way to go?
Well, the Cornerstone has three basic problems with the contraception mandate. The first is social. I mean, when you're talking about a mandate, you're talking about something that really needs broad consensus within the population. And number one, right off the bat, when you have one in four Granite Staters who are Catholic and are religiously opposed to contraception, that right there is not consensus. And then when you throw in obviously other Catholic denominations and the fact that there are a lot of employers, Catholic institutions in the state, that's a lot of folks within the state. You know, we're not talking about something that has broad universal appeal like vaccines for children, for example. We were all children at one time. We can obviously are grateful for the fact that we made it out of childhood. That's the kind of consensus you need when you're talking about a mandate like this. And there are other – frankly, there are other options. Abstinence, for one, is a cheap and readily available form of contraception that's out there. Other reasons, economic reasons, cost of health insurance. You know, New Hampshire, according to the last numbers I've seen, has well over 40 different types of mandates. Well, when you start throwing mandates out there like that, the cost of health insurance goes up. And of course, this whole debate that we're having about health insurance right now is about cost. So really, we need to review these all mandates, frankly, but the contraception mandate in particular. And then finally, consumers should have choice when it comes to these matters. You know, consumers should be able to pick what services are being provided and how much they're willing to pay for it. If we had, in fact, in our opinion, more choice in the health insurance market, we would have better outcomes in that marketplace. But we don't. And so for those reasons, Cornerstone feels that we should, in fact, repeal the contraception mandate entirely.
What do you think about the fact, Scott, that 12 years ago this passed, no controversy, no problem, and now all of a sudden everybody's saying, oh my gosh, we have this, we can't have this. It hasn't been a problem for 12 years, so why is it a problem now?
Well, you have to understand when the law passed, there essentially was an exception in that self-insured employers were not covered under the mandate. And since, for example, most of the large Catholic institutions like Catholic Medical Center were self-insured, it didn't at first cause that much of a controversy.
All right. And we'll definitely talk about that again as the hour goes on. But Cindy Rosenwald, I want to bring you in too. Democratic representatives like yourself have called this, quote, an attack on women's health. But nobody's saying women can't use contraception. They're just saying they have to pay for it themselves. So how is that an attack on women's health?
Well, the American Medical Association and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology have both recommended contraception as an important preventive service for women. It turns out that almost half of pregnancies in the United States are unintended, and with employer-based coverage being the primary source of health insurance for reproductive-age women, insurance is integral to the ability to have access to contraception. There are certainly women whose health would be negatively impacted by becoming pregnant if they have certain health conditions. It's also clear that women who are better able to plan and time their pregnancies have better birth outcomes. So both the mothers and the babies actually do better when childbirth is delayed or timed in such a way that there's kind of an interval between babies. I also think that since the Institute of Medicine has said that the cost of contraception is a barrier to care, and women self-report that if they can't afford their contraception, they use it inconsistently, that the ability to have either no cost or low cost contraception really is important for women's health.
And this is getting a little personal here, but you know, we're talking about contraception, so that means we're talking about sex. So I have to ask you what Scott said, Representative Rosenwald. There are other options. There is abstinence, which is free, and then there are condoms, which are not at all expensive. So do women absolutely need these more expensive forms of contraception?
Well, putting aside the fact that sometimes oral contraceptives or birth control pills are prescribed for other reasons other than birth control, yes, I think women certainly need access to effective birth control. Abstinence kind of takes that choice out of the hands of families because it impacts not only the woman but the man. We know, though, that most Catholic women are okay with contraception. In fact, 97% or 98% of Catholic women report using contraception, and many of them report having used birth control pills at some point in their reproductive lives.
And from what I understand, this bill, and correct me if I'm wrong, would have insurers cover birth control pills for those women who need it for a health reason, like, you know, cysts or other problems. But again, I guess the question is, it's not that anyone's saying you can't have it. It's just that employers shouldn't have to pay for it. That's the issue at hand here.
Well, I think that employers should have to pay for preventive services that don't discriminate against women. And I don't know if you want to talk about the legal history of Supreme Court decisions on contraceptive mandates and non-Supreme Court decisions, but other legal cases, or if you want to stay away from that. But it's been made clear that if you cover prescription drugs, to not cover contraceptives is discriminatory against women.
What do you think about that, Scott? That's an issue that has come up. I mean, if a woman doesn't get birth control pills, why should anybody get any other kind of medicine?
Well, I think there's a clear distinction with birth control pills. You know, what we're talking about fundamentally is a lifestyle choice in most cases where you're choosing to, you know, engage in sexual activity without the consequences of producing a child. You know, with that, why should at the end of the day, the economic result is that people who aren't taking advantage of the contraception availability are in fact subsidizing those that are. So Catholics are being forced to subsidize a lifestyle choice that other people are making. So this isn't a life or death question where we're preventing life-saving drugs here. We're basically preventing, the subsidization of a lifestyle.
So let's say that you, Scott, and you're not, you're very trim, but let's say that you are obese and that you have to take cholesterol medicine because you eat, French fries and hamburgers all day long. Am I subsidizing your lifestyle because I have to subsidize your cholesterol medicine because you choose to eat badly and not exercise? You see where I'm going with this.
Right. And there are very many degrees, obviously, in health choices, between health choices and health outcomes. And I think what we have to do is we have to, go back to a consensus type look at, there's no religious, necessarily objection with that. So we have to look broadly and look at the people and say, listen, do we have a consensus here? When you're violating the religious rights of at least one in four Granite Stater, that does not make consensus.
I want to take some calls and then we'll talk some more. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take a call from, Jillian in Hudson. Hi, Jillian. You're up on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention that, I was at the committee hearing for this bill, and one of the representatives that was there mentioned that, this is something that is inexpensive, and so, insurance is for expensive things, so it shouldn't be covered. And I just wanted to say that, I spend $35 a month, over $400 a year, on my contraceptives, and that's with insurance coverage. So
that's with insurance coverage? Is that what you said, Jillian?
Yeah. So, for a lot of people, paying even that is hard. But, if we have insurance companies not being able to cover this anymore, then, I think that would be really a hardship for a lot of people. And just another thing I want to quickly mention is, I had gotten into a debate with one of the representatives when I was at the State House last week when this was voted on. And basically he said, if you can't afford this, then you need to just not have sex with your husband. And, what about men who, they can't have sex with their wives unless their Viagra is paid for, but that's covered. So I just feel like there's really a double standard for, that lifestyle choice of choosing to have sex is covered for men, but not for women.
Well, and Jillian, thanks for calling in, and we will discuss your points after a very short break. Again, so thanks for joining us. We're going to check in now very quickly with our March membership drive.
Laura is obviously a crackerjack interviewer. She's got to be one of the best radio interviewers in America. She's very good at getting people to express themselves, but she's also no pushover, so that when she does her, every 4 years she does her interviews with the presidential candidates, she pushes them as well as making them feel comfortable. So part of it is her interview skill. Part of it is that she and her producers are exceptionally good at producing a mix of widely interesting things. I mean, I'm a political scientist, so I love the politics. But she also does, really interesting things that help you learn more about the other parts of life, about, birds or people in a little town that's been flooded out. The mix of things that she does is really fascinating. My name is Bob Putnam. My primary residence is in Jaffrey, New Hampshire.
And you can join Bob Putnam right now and support New Hampshire Public Radio by calling 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein, and I'm with our president and CEO, Betsy Gardella. We're working on a challenge. When we raise $25,000 by noon today, we will receive an additional $3,000 from an anonymous donor. We've raised $6,900 so far. That's good news. Let's get to the $10,000 mark just in this break. Three Leadership Circle donors will get us there. Nine people at the day sponsorship level will get us there. 1-888-805-6477.
Abby, most people, by most measures, New Hampshire is kind of a small state. But those of us who live here know that there is a lot going on, especially between January and June when our state house is in session. Today's show is so typical of what we expect from the exchange. You know, a difficult topic, something that's become very politicized, but Laura takes that fair, balanced view, keeps the dialogue civil, keeps the conversation constructive so that our listeners can figure out where are they with this? What is their worldview? You know, we stay on top of what's going on so that you are informed regarding what's going on. If this is a program that means a lot to you, if this is a show that you check in with every day because you want to know what's going on in the state, please call us right now. We have this challenge going, $3,000 on the line. We really want to be able to earn that, and with your support, we'll be successful.
1-888-805-6477. You know, this program is about New Hampshire issues. It's creates New Hampshire connections to national and international events. It is for a New Hampshire audience. And when we launched this show 16 years ago, we recognized the need and we made the investment to create a New Hampshire program. Listener donations have sustained this program for 16 years. And if you've not given yet, please do so now to sustain this program for the next 16 years. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
You know, the way we do this is public radio is a big tent. Everyone is invited to participate. And when many, many, many individuals contribute, we know that no one individual has any influence on the content of the programming. It's part of how we keep our mission secure in public radio. One of the great ways that you can do that this morning is by becoming a sustaining member of New Hampshire Public Radio. And this is how it works. We withdraw whatever amount you are comfortable with from your bank account or your credit card for as long as you like. A typical gift is $10 a month or $20 a month. If you're able to join our leadership circle and become a sustainer at that level, that is $83 a month. That is so doable for so many of us. And as Abby said, to get to that $10,000 mark, we only need 3 leadership circle gifts. If you can support us at that level, please call us now.
1-888-805-6477. Round it up to $100 a month. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the Nashua Symphony with Sergei Shepkin, performing the Simply Great Concert featuring Beethoven's Emperor Piano Concerto, March 17th at 8 p.m. Tickets at nashuasymphony.org. And from Lakes Region Community College, offering statewide energy efficiency training programs to assist professionals and homeowners. Details at lrcc.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the controversy over contraception coverage here in the Granite State. Our guests are Cindy Rosenwald, Democratic State Representative from Nashua, and Scott Moody, Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research. And the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And just before the break, we heard Representative Rosenwald from Gillian, who supported contraceptive coverage, said even with coverage, she still pays $35 a month for birth control pills. And she was complaining that, sometimes Viagra is covered by insurance companies. And I think I also asked a question about whether this policy reversing birth control as a mandate would include vasectomy. So can you address Jillian's concern, please?
Yes. First of all, I'd say I'm not surprised to hear that she's paying $400 a year because it's my— With insurance, that her out-of-pocket cost is $400 a year because contraceptives over a year can actually, the total cost, be over $1,000, which would mean that Meredith is subsidizing 40% of that, if that's what her cost is. There are insurance companies that cover the cost of Viagra. It is not required because
it's not a state mandate.
It's not a mandate. It's not a preventive service, so it wouldn't be required, but it might have a different copay from a lower tier drug like a generic blood pressure medication, for example.
All right, Jillian, thanks for that call. And again, our number 1-800-892-6477. I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Joining us now on the phone is Meredith Cook. She's Director of Public Policy for the Diocese of Manchester. And Meredith, good morning. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Lauren.
Well, how did the diocese get involved in this issue of contraceptive coverage and whether it should be a mandate or not?
In New Hampshire, the diocese learned about the proposed changes to the state contraception mandate at the same time everyone else did at the time it was introduced at the legislature. And because it was an issue of religious liberty, religious freedom, we decided to take a position on that and voice our opinion on that.
And how do you see this as an issue of religious liberty? Explain that for us, Meredith.
Sure. The Catholic Church has had a long history of taking a position against contraception that goes back actually centuries. And because of that, because this mandate violates that teaching, when there was the opportunity with this bill to take a position in opposition to that mandate, we've taken a position on this legislation.
So if an employer, in your feeling, is forced to provide contraceptive coverage, even though that goes against his or her strong Catholic beliefs, you feel that that person's religious liberty is being violated. They're being forced to pay for something that they really find morally objectionable.
Exactly, and that's exactly it. It's if it's being forced to pay for that.
If there's a flip side, Meredith, some look at it the other way, that with the diocese doing this, you're imposing your religious beliefs on others. You know, maybe I work for a Catholic medical center, for example, and they decide not to include contraceptive coverage. Are my religious liberties being violated there by that belief being imposed upon me?
No, and actually, it's an important distinction. First of all, approving the state bill will not deny women access to contraceptives. Unless you work for an employer with a religious objection, access to contraception remains the same as it does today. But employees who work for Catholic employers recognize that their workplace is very different from secular workplaces. There are crucifixes displayed on the walls, and meetings begin with an open prayer. All employees who work for the Diocese of Manchester, which is the Catholic Church in New Hampshire, are required to sign a code of conduct agreeing, among other things, to respect the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. And so, for example, employees in Catholic schools may be required to attend Mass weekly with their students. So it's not the same thing as working for a secular workplace.
Although, from what I understand, the bill is broadly written that any employer with a religious objective, so, you know, he or she could run a high-tech company and still feel this way and say, look, I'm just not going to cover this anymore. That's my understanding.
Again, that is my understanding as well. But again, it would have to be a religious objection to that position.
Democrats have said, Meredith, that 12 years ago when this requirement went into effect, it came about with no objection, including from the diocese. And I wonder what's changed.
Well, and I was not working for the diocese in 1999, so I really can't speak to what happened at that time. And the diocese did not track legislation to the extent it does today. Certainly what's changed is what's prompted the issue, and I think was brought up at the beginning of the program, was that on the federal side, with things that are happening on the federal side, is what has changed. But in the end, there's no requirement that once a bill becomes a law that it can never be challenged again. There certainly have been many examples of that over time.
Are there issues coming up, Meredith, that you want to get your side out there that you feel have not been properly explained?
There are a number of other bills that we've been tracking, and I think it's important to understand that this contraception mandate is only one of many bills that we are tracking, and how it fits into our broader picture and our teaching on how we view the sanctity of life. And certainly people are very familiar with how we view life at the beginning in terms of abortion, but also how we view the sanctity of life throughout life, as we view the protection of health care, the protection of refugees, the protection of the poor, but also at the end of life in terms of opposing the death penalty. So this is only one of many bills that we're tracking at this point in time.
All right, Meredith, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much.
That's Meredith Cook, Director of Public Policy for the Diocese of Manchester. Again, we're talking about the controversy over contraception coverage today in the Exchange, and you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. And I want to ask both of you real briefly your thoughts on what we heard from Meredith Cook. I think you, Scott Moody, first.
Well, you know, I would just like to put a finer point on the role of contraception in the church, in that, you know, one reason why contraception is so opposed is that the pill is essentially it doesn't prevent the fertilization of an egg; it only prevents it from becoming, you know, viably attached to the womb,
implanted.
So, in essence, it is a type of abortion, and you know, the Catholic Church has been very clear in its stance on abortion and anything related to that. So I would just like to, you know, point that fact out, that, you know, people have been excommunicated over abortion. So this is a very serious religious issue. And so that's why people are so fervently up for religious reasons opposed to this.
Representative Rosenwald, your thoughts on what we heard from Meredith Cook?
Yes, thank you. The Catholic Church also has a very long tradition of giving priority and privilege to the conscience of other people, so that Catholics need to examine their own conscience, but also the effect of their choices on other people. As we know, many employees of Catholic institutions are not actually Catholic themselves. So their choices that the institution makes probably should be taking into account the moral choices and medical needs of their employees.
If you work at a Catholic school or a Catholic hospital, then she seemed to be saying, look, you kind of sign on for this. My question, though, is, doesn't this apply to everybody, this bill? Any employer, high-tech company, you know, 7-Eleven, whatever.
That's correct. If my dry cleaners decided they were Jehovah's Witness and did not want to cover the cost of blood transfusions or bone marrow transplant for their employees, they would not have to. So the way this bill is written is extraordinarily broad. It does not just apply to religious employers. It applies to any employer and allows essentially that employer to impose his or her own moral choice on their employees who may be of a different religious faith.
Is that a problem, Scott, in your mind, that it extends not just to, again, the obvious cases, a Catholic hospital, a Catholic charity, a Catholic school, but to basically anybody?
No, I don't. I think this mandate needs to be repealed entirely so that we have a choice in exactly what we want in our insurance plan. I mean, let's not forget, the reason why we're in this problem today with health insurance costs is that we don't have a free market in health insurance. We mandate all this stuff. We control health insurance companies to a large degree. And so the price has gone through the roof. And now we're calling for basically nationalizing healthcare at the federal level as a result.
All right. And let's bring another voice into our conversation now. After we heard from Meredith Cook at the diocese, I want to bring in Jennifer Frizzell, New Hampshire Senior Policy Advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And Jennifer Frizzell, thanks for your time. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, this bill doesn't say that women can't use birth control. It just says they might have to cover it themselves if their employer objects. Your organization has called this bill an attack on women's health care. How is that an attack on women's health care, Jen?
Well, Laura, at Planned Parenthood, we see every day how important access to contraception is to women in New Hampshire, and we believe that regardless of where they work, they should have access to health insurance that covers preventative care like birth control. You know, birth control use is nearly universal and for women in New Hampshire and in the United States. And yet, without access to insurance coverage, one in three American women will struggle with birth control costs at some point in their life. I know earlier in your discussion today, there's reference to the broad range of health benefits that birth control provides to women in addition to its family planning purposes. And so we really believe that women should be able to have access to birth control as preventative medicine, and that there are real significant consequences if women have to delay or not have affordable access.
What about the idea that, you know, this isn't a cancer drug, Jennifer? This is a lifestyle choice, and if you don't want to get pregnant, you do have other cheaper options that you can follow, that insurers should not be required to do this.
Well, you know, the Nonpartisan Institute of Medicine has recommended that birth control be covered as the most reliable form of preventing unintended pregnancy. And so, you know, we simply don't believe that women should be required to have less reliable methods of birth control, you know, nor do we think that married couples or committed couples who, you know, engage in sexual intercourse shouldn't have all of the health benefits available to them to prevent unintended pregnancy.
How does this state bill, and again, nowhere near law, has to go through the Senate, and Governor Lynch doesn't seem to like it, but how does this state bill, Jennifer, interact with or counteract attempts at the federal level to find some common ground on this conception, contraception coverage?
Well, you know, if I could just go back to 1999, the bill, when it was enacted, was actually common ground. There was great bipartisan support for universal contraceptive access, and New Hampshire made its own statement with regard to the importance of not discriminating against women in health care when it enacted its contraceptive equity provision. So we were 12 years ahead of this federal policy that is looking now at what types of benefits will be considered essential in health plans that are offered under federal health reform. I think, you know, we're still trying to look closely at how New Hampshire's contraceptive coverage equity provision, if it was not adjusted or repealed, would interplay with the HHS coverage provision. But I think what we believe is that the state policy will preempt or be able to dictate different than, or if it's more protective of women's health than the federal policy announced recently by the secretary.
And one last question for you, Jennifer, and it's more of a political question. Again, the bill's chances are, you know, who knows, because Governor Lynch doesn't seem to like it. How much do you think candidates for governor and New Hampshire Statehouse will be talking about this issue come the fall elections, Jennifer?
Well, you know, I think that this bill is compiled with a number of legislative efforts that we've seen in the last year, year and a half, to undermine women's health and to attack, you know, the provision and respectful of medical providers and the services that women need. And so I think that that is going to be on the minds of voters. I know that women are watching these decisions in our legislature right now, and we're seeing a tremendous amount of activism and support coming to our organization for individuals who want to defend access to such basic medical services as contraception.
Okay, Jennifer Frizzell, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks to your guests.
That's Jennifer Frizzell, New Hampshire Senior Policy Advisor for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England. And after a very short break, we'll go back to your phone calls and emails. So stay with us.
You hear it so often, you probably don't even notice it anymore.
Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from you, our members.
But we do.
And UNH professionals.
Every time we say it. Every time someone calls the exchange, every time someone leaves a post on our website, we know that NHPR is what it is because of you. And we like to think that our work has left its mark on New Hampshire, and that's why we continue to do what we do.
New Hampshire is better with NHPR.
If you're a member, your renewals have helped us get where we are.
NHPR is better with me.
If you're not a member, your donation can make us better still. And that benefits the whole state.
New Hampshire is better with NHPR.
And however much you give, NHPR is better with you.
And the number to call to improve your state and your public radio station is 1-888-805-6477 or online nhpr.org. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with our president and CEO, Betsy Gardella. Betsy, we're working on a challenge this morning, trying to raise $25,000 by noon today to receive an additional $3,000 from an anonymous donor. We've raised $7,100 so far. We're making some progress, but we have a long way to go. We'd like to get to $10,000 just in this break. Three Leadership Circle donors would get us there. Nine people at $30 a month would get us there. 15 people at $15 a month would get us there. You make the decision and make the call, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. And Betsy, these challenges are very real.
They are very real. And listeners sometimes ask me, you know, is it real? Do you really not get the money if you don't make the challenge? And the answer to that question is, we don't get the money if we don't make the challenge. You know, we are wonderful. Our listeners are wonderful. They, some of them have the means to put up a challenge grant with the hope of inspiring other listeners to contribute. And sometimes those contributions are first-time gifts. Sometimes they're renewing gifts. Sometimes they're additional gifts. It all counts toward the match. If we don't reach our goal, $25,000 this morning by noon is the challenge that we're working on. We don't earn that $3,000. And I have to say, we've, you know, in this drive, just in this drive alone, we have not earned, it's a funny way to say it, but we have not earned $17,000 in challenge money. That's a big number. We don't want to make it 20. We want to hit this goal. So wonderful NHPR listeners, Exchange fans, now is the moment to call.
1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. We trust that's not going to happen this morning, because every listener, every person who values the Exchange has a role to play, everyone who tunes in every single day. We know you're hearing these messages, and sometimes it takes a few times for that message to sink in. Sometimes it takes that sharp moment of clarity when you finally realize that we are indeed talking to you and not somebody else. Everyone has the power to help us achieve success this morning. John has made his gift from Newmarket, Thomas in Concord, Virginia in Dover, Josephine in Manchester, Mark in New London called. He said the message finally sunk through for him. So let it sink in for you right now and help us be successful with this challenge. 1-888-805-6477.
Just a little reminder for those of you who haven't heard about today's special day prize. We have an extraordinary thank you gift, or not a thank you gift. I wish it could be a thank you gift. A day prize for everyone who contributes today will be entered into a drawing to win 50,000 frequent flyer miles. You could use those miles in a couple of ways. That is 2 round-trip tickets to any place in the continental United States. It is also 1 round-trip to Europe. So if you were thinking about that trip to Lisbon or London or
Barcelona,
Italy, wherever, you know, this would be just such a fantastic prize. I think we know that we're world travelers. We're global citizens. This is a wonderful time to contribute.
1-888-805-6477. Again, we're working on a challenge. A little over 2 hours left to the deadline. Make your call right now and help us be successful, or do it online, nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. And from Novus Engineering, an employee-owned company with a 23-year legacy of collaboration, responsiveness, and community involvement. Information at novusengineering.com. Coming up at 10, it's the Diane Rehm Show on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, whether employers with moral objections to birth control should be allowed to exclude contraception coverage in their employee insurance policies. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Should employer-provided insurance policies include birth control, or is this something that people should have to buy on their own? Give us a call. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Cindy Rosenwald, Democratic State Representative from Nashua, and Scott Moody, Vice President of Policy at Cornerstone Policy Research. And both of you, I wanted to refer back to what we heard from Jennifer Frizzell. And Scott Moody, to you, I think, she quoted, as Representative Rosenwald has, health providers, you know, the Institute of Medicine. Representative Rosenwald talked earlier about the American Medical Association. So well-respected medical organizations say, look, providing contraception coverage is important. It helps with family planning. It helps with unwanted pregnancies. What's your response, Scott, to these esteemed health groups saying, look, this is good?
Well, I mean, when you have to look at the whole picture as well as, you know, what birth control is about, which is preventing unwanted pregnancies, you know, one of the side effects of this is that you're basically lowering the cost of sex, and so you're going to get more of it. And we've also, as a result of seeing an explosion in sexually transmitted diseases, those have a cost, both have a cost to our health insurance as well. We're going to have to now treat these diseases. And, you know, if we want to really talk about costs, there's one surefire way that's free, and it's 100% effective in both preventing unwanted births as well as unwanted sexually transmitted diseases, and that's simply abstinence.
What do you think, Representative Rosenwald?
I don't think abstinence is what the families of New Hampshire actually want. I don't think that's good social policy to be telling people you should not be having sex with your husband. In terms of more sexually transmitted diseases, some of them are not expensive to treat. One that is quite expensive to treat is HIV, but we've done a very good job of containing that in New Hampshire. So we really have not seen an explosion.
Let's take some more calls again. This is Elizabeth in Keene. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for letting me talk.
Sure.
I guess I'd like to call as one of those near mythical 2% of Catholic women who I am a devout practicing Catholic, and my husband and I do practice and advocate for, you know, more natural family planning, and we find it very rewarding. I guess part of what I'd like to say is that even as a devout Catholic, I do recognize that, you know, our democracy doesn't claim to ever agree 100% with anyone's moral beliefs, and we all, you know, we pay taxes for the common good, and we all pay for things we don't like, but we recognize our, you know, agreed upon by the majority as either effective or even just legal. I wonder if the crux of this conversation is really about the fact that employers get caught in the middle as the deliverers of health care. You know, I personally was all for this healthcare reform. I think it should go even further. I do think we should have just public healthcare. I don't think employers should be caught in the middle and let people continue to follow their own conscience and make their own decisions. But with the system we've got, if you are in a religious institution, I do think that that institution should not be forced to go against some of their core beliefs. Whether that applies to individuals, you know, that's where it gets murky, and that's where this whole idea of healthcare being, you know, tied up in the individual belief systems of employers, that gets really tricky. And I don't think we should keep going there. I think we should really take a look at who's getting in the way of our healthcare.
So, Elizabeth, you sound conflicted. I mean, here you practice natural family planning on your own. You seem to feel that religious organizations should not be forced to pay for birth control coverage, but you also seem to feel like we should have, you know, a different healthcare system where it's all taxpayer funded. In that case, Elizabeth, your tax dollars would go to provide contraception coverage.
My taxpayers already go to wars and capital punishment and things I already don't agree with. I resolve that my own way. And I work against, you know, I have my own agency in this democracy to try to make the changes I see as important.
Well, Elizabeth, it's good to hear from you, especially given that you really have a personal stake in this. And I probably misspoke a little bit, Representative Rosenwald. If we did have a national healthcare system, you know, your tax dollars might or might not go to contraception. I mean, that would be a decision kind of like what we're debating right now.
Well, your tax dollars already do go to contraception through the Medicaid program.
Meaning that does Medicaid cover contraception right
now?
Yes.
As far as I know, it does.
Could a state say, look, we don't believe in contraceptive coverage. We don't think that that's morally defensible. So our state Medicaid plans will no longer include contraception.
I think that would be very difficult to do. While prescription drugs are a an optional benefit under Medicaid. Every single state has one. But referring back to a court case in California in 1990 when Catholic Charities sued the state of California over having to cover contraceptives in their prescription drug plans, they were told that they lost. It was not a constitutional violation because the law was very narrow. It had a secular purpose, and it didn't seek to promote or inhibit any particular religious belief. So to not cover contraceptives presumably would have been unconstitutional since the state covered other preventive prescription drugs.
Well, Elizabeth, it's good to hear from you. And our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And here's an email from Mike in Concord who says, if the debate is about cost, aren't unintended pregnancies and birthing costs much higher than that of oral contraception? Mike says, please elaborate on how removing women's birth control access controls cost in a health insurance pool. And Scott, you brought up the costs earlier, so why don't you take Mike's email?
Well, that's certainly a point, and you have to weigh the pros and cons of the two costs, one related to births. And the problem is you know, in New Hampshire, you know, having children isn't our problem. In fact, the number of children under the age of 18 in New Hampshire have declined by 9% over the last decade. So we clearly don't have a child problem in New Hampshire.
Do you want to address the cost issue too, real quickly, Representative?
Yes, I would really like to. Mike brings up a good point. The cost of preventing a pregnancy is less than the cost of the pregnancy itself. In fact, a study from the National Business Group on Health determined that the price of providing contraceptions was about $1.69 per member per month, one vaginal birth at the time in 2005 dollars, sorry, was $7,000, and the cost of a cesarean section at that time was $12,000. So it's much more expensive to actually have a baby. And I think that's why you don't hear employers and insurance companies asking for a repeal of this mandate.
One last couple questions for you, and this is for you, Representative Rosenwald. We came across a new CBS New York Times poll this morning showing that most Americans believe there should be an exception for employers who may have a moral or religious objection to covering birth control. This is a brand new poll. What do you think? It sounds like you're on the other side of this issue.
Well, there already are ways that religious employers in New Hampshire do not have to cover a mandate for contraception.
And they can self-insure.
They can self-insure. They cannot offer insurance. They cannot offer prescription drug coverage. And I would just say that a long track record of Supreme Court opinions has limited the idea of what religious beliefs can get for an exemption.
Where do you think this is going to go, Scott Moody, in terms of the state Senate and Governor Lynch?
Well, I think legislatively, I think the opposition by Governor Lynch will prevent it from being repealed in the short term. But, you know, when you're looking at the national issue, I think what that poll is reflecting is the fact that, you know, we're basically nationalizing 20% of our economy through President Obama's healthcare initiative. These kind of conflicts in the political sector are going to become more prevalent, not less, under a politicized healthcare system. And what we really need is if we just simply had more of a free market system where people could pick and choose their health insurance, what they want included, we would actually avoid these kinds of conflicts.
All right. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow, actually, about healthcare mandates and how much and whether they raise the cost of insurance here in the Granite State. You know, Representative Rosenwald, even if this doesn't become law, how much do you think this bill is going to become an issue in the November elections?
Well, literally every single woman that I have run into in my daily life, non-legislative life, in the last couple weeks has thought this was a ridiculous taking the mind of the legislature off their promise to develop the economy and promote jobs.
And yet we have this poll showing that more Americans think this is okay.
I interact with women in New Hampshire.
All right. Well, both of you, thank you very much for being with us today. Not an easy topic. I appreciate you tackling it with me.
Thank you.
And Scott Moody, thank you for being here. Representative Roosevelt, thank you. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Before we go to our membership drive and check in with how that's going, I do want to wish a very happy birthday to our engineer, Dan Colgan.
Happy birthday, Dan. Give us a call, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm in charge of programming here, and I'm with our president and CEO, Betsy Gardella. Betsy, we've been working on this challenge today to raise $25,000 by noon. The mail has come in. We've made a big jump. We're at $12,300 raised so far. We're almost at the halfway point, which is very encouraging. Make your call right now. Just one $200 gift puts us at the halfway mark, 1-888-805-6477.
You know, Laura's topic today is a challenging one. It calls for a very delicate balance, and it's what you rely on with the Exchange. Laura's guests represent their views. Listeners call in and have their say. No raised voices. It's not the way we do it in public radio. It is civil dialogue. Laura is our host. She facilitates the conversation. She doesn't have to be a referee, because the assumption with our programming is that there's underlying respect for differing points of view. If this kind of programming is what you value, an honest and open discussion of ideas and issues that matter, please give us a call right now. The number is 1-888-805-6477.
And, you know, your calls during a topic like this are so important to the Exchange, because you have a chance to weigh in during the discussion. In the same way, your donation is what fuels the engine that makes this statewide service function. This morning, we've heard from Alton Bay, Loudoun, Grantham, Center Sandwich, Dover, Keene, Bristol, Campton, Epsom, Dublin, and Goffstown. Everyone has a role to play, from Pittsfield to Whitefield, from Littleton to Hopkinton, from Pembroke to Colebrook, from Winchester, Manchester to Chichester. Everyone has a role to play. 1-888-805-6477 or make your gift online, nhpr.org.
We are so close to the halfway mark of making this challenge. Come on, Exchange listeners.